Chapter 47. Unlimited Credit. About 2 o'clock the following day, a calèche, drawn by a pair of magnificent English horses, stopped at the door of Monte Cristo, and a person dressed in a blue coat, with buttons of a similar colour, a white waistcoat, over which was displayed a massive gold chain, brown trousers, and a quantity of black hair descending so low over his eyebrows as to leave it doubtful whether it were not artificial, so little did its jetty glossiness assimilate with the deep wrinkles stamped on his features, bent forwards from the carriage door, on the panels of which were emblazoned the armorial bearings of a baron, and directed his groom to inquire at the porter's lodge whether the Count of Monte Cristo resided there, and if he were within. While waiting, the occupant of the carriage surveyed the house, the garden, so far as he could distinguish it, and the livery of the servants who passed to and fro, with an attention so close as to be somewhat impertinent. The groom, in obedience to his orders, tapped at the window of the porter's lodge, saying, "Pray, does not the Count of Monte Cristo live here?"
"His Excellency does reside here," replied the concierge. "But," added he, glancing an inquiring look at Ali,
Ali returned a sign in the negative.
"But what?" asked the groom.
"His Excellency does not receive visitors today."
"Then take my master's card. You'll see who master is, Monsieur le Baron d'Anglas. Be sure to give the card to the Count, and say that, although in haste to attend the chamber, my master came out of his way to have the honour of calling upon him."
"I never speak to His Excellency," replied the concierge. "The valet de chambre will carry a message."
The groom returned to the carriage.
"Well?" asked Danglars.
The man, somewhat crestfallen by the rebuke he had received, detailed to his master all that had passed between himself and the concierge.
"Bless me!" murmured Monsieur le Baron d'Anglas. "This must surely be a prince instead of a count, by their styling him Excellency, and only venturing to address him by the medium of his valet de chambre. However, it does not signify. He has a letter of credit on me, so I must see him when he requires his money."
Then, throwing himself back in his carriage, Danglars called out to his coachman, in a voice that might be heard across the road,
"To the Chamber of Deputies!"
Apprised in time of the visit paid him, Monte Cristo had, from behind the blinds of his pavilion, as minutely observed the baron by means of an excellent lorgnette as Danglars himself had scrutinized the house, garden, and servants. "That fellow has a decidedly bad countenance," said the Count, in a tone of disgust, as he shut up his glass into its ivory case.
"Ali!"
cried he, striking at the same time on the brazen gong. Ali appeared.
"Summon Bertuccio," said the Count.
Almost immediately Bertuccio entered the apartment.
"Did Your Excellency desire to see me?"
inquired he.
"I did," replied the Count. "You no doubt observed the horses, standing a few minutes since at the door."
"Certainly, Your Excellency. I noticed them for their remarkable beauty."
"Then how comes it," said Monte Cristo with a frown, "that when I desired you to purchase for me the finest pair of horses to be found in Paris, you permitted so splendid a couple as those I allude to be in the possession of any one but myself?"
At the look of displeasure, added to the angry tone in which the Count spoke, Ali turned pale and held down his head.
"It is not your fault, my good Ali," said the Count, in the Arabic language, and in a tone of such gentleness as none would have given him credit for being capable of showing. "It is not your fault. You do not profess to understand the choice of English horses."
The countenance of poor Ali recovered its serenity.
"Permit me to assure Your Excellency," said Bertuccio, "that the horses you speak of were not to be sold when I purchased yours."
Monte Cristo shrugged his shoulders.
"It seems, Monsieur l'Intendant," he said, "that you have yet to learn that all things are to be sold to such as care to pay the price."
"Monsieur le Comte is not perhaps aware that Monsieur Danglars gave 16,000 francs for his horses."
"Very well. Then offer him double that sum. A banker never loses an opportunity of doubling his capital."
"Is Your Excellency really in earnest?" inquired the steward.
Monte Cristo regarded the person who durst presume to doubt his words with a look of one equally surprised and displeased.
"I have to pay a visit this evening," replied he. "I desire that these horses, with completely new harness, may be at the door with my carriage."
Bertuccio bowed and was about to retire, but when he reached the door he paused and then said,
"And what o'clock does Your Excellency wish the carriage and horses ready?"
"At 5 o'clock," replied the Count.
"I beg Your Excellency's pardon,"
interposed the steward, in a deprecating manner, for venturing to observe that it is already 2 o'clock.
"I am perfectly aware of that fact," answered Monte Cristo calmly. Then, turning towards Ali, he said, "Let all the horses in my stables be led before the windows of your young lady, that she may select those she prefers for her carriage. Request her also to oblige me by saying whether it is her pleasure to dine with me. If so, let dinner be served in her apartments." The Count then motioned to Ali to follow him into his study, where they conversed long and earnestly together. As the hand of the clock pointed to 5 o'clock, the Count struck thrice upon his gong. When Ali was wanted, 1 stroke was given, 2 summoned Baptistin, and 3 Bertuccio. The steward entered.
"My horses," said Monte Cristo. "They are at the door, harnessed to the carriage, as Your Excellency desired. Does Monsieur le Comte wish me to accompany him?"
"No, the coachman, Ali, and Baptistin will be sufficient without you."
The Count descended to the door of his mansion, and beheld his carriage drawn by the very pair of horses he had so much admired in the morning as the property of Danglars. As he passed them, he said, "They are extremely handsome, certainly, and you have done well to purchase them, although you were somewhat remiss not to have procured them sooner."
"Indeed, Your Excellency, I had very considerable difficulty in obtaining them, and as it is, they have cost an enormous price."
"Does the sum you gave for them make the animals less beautiful?" inquired the Count, shrugging his shoulders.
"Nay, if Your Excellency is satisfied, all is as I could wish it. Whither does Monsieur le Comte desire to be driven?"
"To the residence of Monsieur le Baron d'Anglars, Rue de la Chaussée d'Antin."
This conversation had passed as they stood upon the terrace from which a flight of stone steps led to the carriage drive. As Bertuccio, with a respectful bow, was moving away, the Count called him back.
"I have another commission for you, Monsieur Bertuccio," said he. "I am desirous of having an estate by the seaside in Normandy, for instance between Havre and Boulogne. You see, I give you a wide range. It will be absolutely necessary that the place you may select have a small harbour, creek, or bay, into which my vessel can enter and remain at anchor. She merely draws 15 feet water. She must be kept in constant readiness to sail immediately I think proper to give the signal. Make the requisite inquiries for a place of this description, and when you have met with an eligible spot, visit it, and if it possess the advantages desired, purchase it at once in your own name. The corvette must now, I think, be on her way to Fécamp, must she not?"
"Certainly, Your Excellency. I saw her put to sea the same evening we quitted Marseille."
"And the yacht?"
"Was ordered to remain at Martigues."
"'Tis well. I wish you to write from time to time to the captains in charge of the 2 vessels, so as to keep them on the alert."
"And a steamboat? Has Your Excellency any orders to give respecting her?"
"She is at Chalons, is she not?"
"She is, my lord."
"The directions I gave you for the other 2 vessels may suffice for the steamboat also."
"I understand, my lord, and will punctually fulfil your commands."
"When you have purchased the estate I desire, I mean to establish constant relays of horses at 10 leagues distance, one from the other, along the northern and southern road.
Your Excellency may fully depend upon my zeal and fidelity in all things."
The Count gave an approving smile, descended the terrace steps, and sprang into his carriage, which, drawn by the beautiful animals so expensively purchased, was whirled along with incredible swiftness, and stopped only before the house of the banker. Danglars was engaged at that moment, presiding over a railroad committee, but the meeting was nearly concluded when the name of his visitor was announced. As the Count's title sounded on his ear, he rose, and addressing his colleagues, many of whom were members of either chamber, he said,
"Gentlemen, I must pray you to excuse my quitting you thus, but a most ridiculous circumstance has occurred, which is this. Thompson and French, the bankers at Rome, have sent to me a certain individual calling himself the Count of Monte Cristo, who is desirous of opening an account with me to any amount he pleases. I confess this is the drollest thing I've ever met with in the course of my extensive foreign transactions, and you may readily suppose it has greatly roused my curiosity. Indeed, so much did I long to see the bearer of so unprecedented an order for an unlimited credit, that I took the trouble this morning to call on the pretended Count, for his title is a mere fiction, of that I am persuaded. We all know Counts nowadays are not famous for their riches, but would you believe, upon arriving at the residence of the soi-disant Count of Monte Cristo, I was very coolly informed he did not receive visitors that day. Upon my word, such airs are ridiculous, and befitting only some great millionaire or a capricious beauty.
I made inquiries and found that the house where the said Count resides in the Champs-Élysées is his own property, and certainly it was very decently kept up and arranged as far as I could judge from the gardens and exterior of the house. But, pursued Danglars, with one of his sinister smiles, an order for unlimited credit calls for something like caution on the part of the banker on whom that order is given. These facts stated, I will freely confess I'm very anxious to see the individual just now announced. I suspect a hoax is intended, but the good folks who thought fit to play it off on me knew but little whom they had to deal with.
Having delivered himself of this pompous address, uttered with a degree of energy that left the Baron almost out of breath, he bowed to the assembled party and withdrew to his drawing-room, whose sumptuous fittings up of white and gold had caused a great and admiring sensation in the Chaussée d'Antin. It was to this apartment he had desired his guest to be shown, fully reckoning upon the overwhelming effect so dazzling a coup d'œil would produce. He found the Count standing before some copies of Albano and Fattore that had been passed off to the bankers as originals, but which, copies of the paintings of those great masters as they were, seemed to feel their degradation in being brought into juxtaposition with the gaudy gilding that covered the ceiling. The Count turned round as he heard the entrance of Danglars into the room. With a slight inclination of the head, Danglars signed to the Count to be seated, pointing significantly to a gilded armchair covered with white satin embroidered with gold. The Count obeyed.
"I have the honour, I presume, of addressing Monsieur le Monte Cristo?" The Count bowed.
"And I of speaking to Baron Danglars, Chevalier de la Légion d'Honneur and member of the Chamber of Deputies?" With an air of extreme gravity, Monte Cristo slowly enumerated the various titles engraved on the card left at his house by the Baron. Danglars felt all the irony contained in the address of his visitor. For a minute or two he compressed his lips as though seeking to conquer his rage ere he trusted himself to speak. Then, turning to his visitor, he said,
"You will, I trust, excuse my not having called you by your title when I first addressed you, but you are aware we are living under a popular form of government, and that I am myself a representative of the liberties of the people."
"So much so," replied Monte Cristo, "that while preserving the habit of styling yourself Baron, you have deemed it advisable to lay aside that of calling others by their titles."
"Upon my word," said Danglars, with affected carelessness, "I attach no sort of value to such empty distinctions, but the fact is I was made Baron, and also Chevalier de la Légion d'Honneur, in consequence of some services I had rendered government. But
you have abdicated your titles after the example set you by Messrs. De Montmorency and Lafayette. Well, you cannot possibly choose more noble models for your conduct."
"Why," replied Danglars, "I do not mean to say I have altogether laid aside my titles. With the servants, for instance, there I think it right to preserve my rank with all its outward forms.
Merci, to your domestics you are my lord, Monsieur le Baron. The journalists of the day style you Monsieur, while your constituents term you citizen." Again Danglars bit his lips with baffled spite. He saw well enough that he was no match for Monte Cristo in an argument of this sort, and he therefore hastened to turn to subjects more familiar to him, and calculated on having all the advantages on his side.
"Permit me to inform you, Monsieur le Comte," said he, bowing, "that I have received a letter of advice from Thompson and French of Rome."
"I am glad to hear it, Monsieur le Baron, for I must claim the privilege of so addressing you as well as your servants. I have acquired the bad habit of calling persons by their style and title from living in a country where barons are still met with, simply because persons are never suddenly elevated to a rank which is possessed only in right of ancestry. But as regards the letter of advice, I am charmed to find it has reached you. That will spare me the troublesome and disagreeable task of coming to you for money itself. You have received a regular letter of advice, therefore my checks will be duly honoured, and we shall neither of us have to go out of our way in the transaction."
"There is one slight difficulty," said Danglars, "and that consists in my precisely comprehending the letter itself."
"Indeed?"
"And for that reason I did myself the honour of calling upon you, in order to beg you would explain some part of it to me."
"With much pleasure. Pray, now I am here, let me know what it was that baffled your powers of comprehension."
"Why," said Danglars, "in the letter, I believe I have it about me."
Here he felt in his breast pocket.
"Yes, here it is. Well, this letter gives Monsieur le Comte de Monte Cristo unlimited credit on our house." "'And what is there that requires explaining in that simple fact, may I ask, Monsieur le Baron?'
"'Merely the term unlimited, nothing else, certainly.'
"'Is not that word known in France? "'Perhaps indeed it does not belong to the language, "'for the persons from whom you received your letter of advice "'are a species of Anglo-Germans, "'and very probably do not write very choice or accurate French.
"'Oh, as for the composition of the letter, "'there is not the smallest error in it, "'but as regards the competency of the document, "'I certainly have doubts.'
"'Is it possible?' asked the Count, "'assuming an air and tone of the utmost simplicity and candour. "'Is it possible that Thompson and French are not looked upon as safe and solvent bankers? "'Pray tell me what you think, Monsieur le Baron, "'for I feel uneasy, I can assure you, having some considerable property in their hands.'
"'Thompson and French are bankers of the highest repute,' replied Danglars, with an almost mocking smile. "'And it was not of their solvency or capability I spoke, but of the word unlimited, which in financial affairs is so extremely vague a term that—that—'
"'In fact,' said Monte Cristo, "'that its sense is also without limitation.'
"'Precisely what I was about to say,' cried Danglars. "'Now what is vague is doubtful, and, says the wise man, "'where there is doubt, there is danger.'
"'Meaning to say,' rejoined Monte Cristo, "'that however Thompson and French may be inclined to commit acts of imprudence and folly, "'Monsieur le Baron Danglars is not disposed to follow their example.'
"'How so, Monsieur le Comte?'
"'Simply thus. The banking house of Thompson and French set no bounds to their engagements, "'while that of Monsieur Danglars has its limits.' Truly he is wise as the sage whose prudent apothegm he quoted but just now.
"'Monsieur,' replied the banker, drawing himself up with a haughty air, "'the amount of my capital or the extent and solvency of my engagements have never yet been questioned.'
"'It seems then reserved for me,' said Monte Cristo coldly, "'to be the first to do so.'
"'And by what right, sir?'
"'By right of the objections you have raised, and the explanations you have demanded.' "'Which certainly imply considerable distrust on your part, either of yourself or me. "'The former, most probably.'
"'Well, sir,' resumed Danglars, after a brief silence, "'I will endeavour to make myself understood by requesting you to inform me "'for what sum you propose to draw upon me.'
"'Why, truly,' replied Monte Cristo, determined not to lose an inch of the ground he had gained. "'My reason for desiring an unlimited credit was precisely because I did not know what money I might expend.' The banker now thought it his turn to show off and make a display of wealth and consequence. Flinging himself back, therefore, in his armchair, he said, with an arrogant and purse-proud air,
"'Let me beg of you not to hesitate in naming your wishes. You will then be convinced that the resources of the House of Danglars, however limited, are still equal to meeting the largest demands, and were you even to require a million—'
"'I beg your pardon,' interposed Monte Cristo.
"'I observed,' replied Danglars, with a patronizing and pompous air, "'that should you be hard-pressed, the concern of which I am the head would not scruple to accommodate you to the amount of a million.'
"'A million?' retorted the Count.
"'And what use can you possibly suppose so pitiful a sum would be to me?'
"'My dear sir, if a trifle like that could suffice me, "'I should never have given myself the trouble "'of opening an account for so contemptible an amount. "'A million! "'Excuse my smiling when you speak of a sum "'I am in the habit of carrying in my pocket-book or dressing-case.'
"'And with these words, Monte Cristo took from his pocket "'a small case containing his visiting cards, "'and drew forth two orders on the treasury for 500,000 francs each, "'payable at sight to the bearer.'
A man like Danglars was wholly inaccessible to any gentler method of correction. His upstart arrogance, his ostentatious vulgarity, were only assailable by blows dealt with the force and vigour of the present coup. Its effect on the banker was perfectly stunning, and as though scarcely venturing to credit his senses, he continued gazing from the paper to the Count with a confused and mystified air.
"'Come, come,' said Monte Cristo, "'confess honestly that you have not perfect confidence in the responsibility of the House of Thompson and French. There is nothing very strange in your exercising what seems to you a necessary caution. However, foreseeing that such might be the case, I determined, spite of my ignorance in such matters, to be provided with the means of banishing all scruples from your mind, and at the same time leaving you quite at liberty to act as you pleased in the affair. See, here are two similar letters to that you have received yourself. The one from the house of Arstein and Eskels of Vienna to Baron de Rothschild, the other drawn from Baring of London to Monsieur Lafitte. Now, sir, you have but to say the word, and I will spare you all uneasiness and alarm on the subject by presenting my letter of credit at one or other of the establishments I have named. The blow had struck home, and Danglars was entirely vanquished. With a trembling hand he took the two letters from Vienna and London from the Count, who held them carelessly between his finger and thumb, as though to him they were mere everyday matters to which he attached but very little interest. Having carefully perused the documents in question, the banker proceeded to ascertain the genuineness of the signatures, and this he did with a scrutiny so severe as might have appeared insulting to the Count, had it not suited his present purpose to mislead the banker in every respect. "Well, sir," said Danglars, rising, after he had well convinced himself of the authenticity of the documents he held, and bowing as though in adoration of a man, the thrice-happy possessor of as many orders for unlimited credit on the three principal banks of Paris. "You have their signatures worth untold wealth. Although your conversation and vouchers put an end to all mistrust in the affair, you must pardon me, Monsieur le Comte, for confessing the most extreme astonishment." "Nay, nay," answered Monte Cristo, with the easiest and most gentlemanly air imaginable. "'Tis not for such trifling sums as these to startle or astonish the banking-house of Monsieur le Baron d'Anglas. Then, as all is settled as to forms between us, I will thank you to send a supply of money to me tomorrow."
"By all means, Monsieur le Comte. What sum do you want?"
"Why," replied Monte Cristo, "since we mutually understand each other, we may as well fix a sum as the probable expenditure of the first year. Suppose we say 6 millions to—"
"6 millions?" gasped out Danglars. "Certainly, whatever you please."
"Then if I should require more," continued Monte Cristo, in a careless and indifferent manner, "why, of course, I should draw upon you. But my present intention is not to remain in France more than a year, and during that period I scarcely think I shall exceed the sum I mentioned. However, we shall see."
"The money you desire shall be at your house by 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, Monsieur le Comte," replied Danglars. "How would you like to have it? In gold, silver, or notes?"
"Half in gold, and the other half in banknotes, if you please," said the Count, rising from his seat.
"I must confess to you, Monsieur le Comte," said Danglars, "that I have hitherto imagined myself acquainted with the degree of fortune possessed by all the rich individuals of Europe, and still wealth such as yours has been wholly unknown to me. May I presume to ask whether you have long possessed it?"
"It has been in the family a very long while," returned Monte Cristo. "A sort of treasure expressly forbidden to be touched for a certain period of years, during which the accumulated interest has doubled the capital. The period appointed by the testator for the disposal of these riches occurred only a short time ago, and they have only been employed by me within the last few years. Your ignorance on the subject, therefore, is easily accounted for. However, you will be better informed as to me and my possessions ere long." And the Count, while pronouncing these latter words, accompanied them with one of those ghastly smiles that used to strike terror into poor Franz d'Epinay.
"With your tastes and means of gratifying them," continued Danglars, "you will exhibit a splendour that must effectually put us poor miserable millionaires quite in the background. If perfectly agreeable to you, I shall do myself the honour of introducing you to Madame la Baronne Danglars. Excuse my impatience, Monsieur le Comte, but a person of your wealth and influence cannot receive too much attention."
Monte Cristo bowed in sign that he accepted the proffered honour, and the financier immediately rang a small bell, which was answered by a servant in a showy livery.
"Is Madame la Baronne at home?" inquired Danglars.
"Yes, Monsieur le Baron," answered the man.
"And alone?"
"No, Monsieur le Baron. Madame has visitors."
"Have you any objection to meet any persons who may be with Madame, or do you desire to preserve a strict incognito?"
"No, indeed," replied Monte Cristo with a smile. "I do not arrogate to myself the right of so doing."
"And who is with Madame? Monsieur Debray?" inquired Danglars,
with an air of indulgence and good nature that made Monte Cristo smile, acquainted as he was with the secrets of the banker's domestic life.
"Yes, Monsieur le Baron," replied the servant. "Monsieur Debray is with Madame."
Danglars nodded his head, then turning to Monte Cristo said,
Monsieur Lucien Debré is an old friend of ours, and private secretary to the Minister de l'Intérieur. As for my wife, I must tell you she lowered herself by marrying me, for she belongs to one of the most ancient families in France. Her maiden name was de Servière, and her first husband was Monsieur le Colonel Marquis de Narcon. I have not the honour of knowing Madame Danglars, but I have already met Monsieur Lucien Debré.
"Oh, indeed," said Danglars. "And where was that?"
"At the house of Monsieur de Morcerf."
"Oh, what, you are acquainted with the young Viscount, are you?"
"We were together a good deal during the Carnival at Rome."
"True, true," cried Danglars. "Let me see, have I not heard talk of some strange adventure with bandits or thieves hid in ruins, and of his having had a miraculous escape? I forget how, but I know he used to amuse my wife and daughter by telling them about it after his return from Italy."
"Madame la Baronne is waiting to receive you, gentlemen," said the servant, who had gone to inquire the pleasure of his mistress.
"With your permission," said Danglars, bowing, "I will precede you to show you the way."
"By all means," replied Monte Cristo, "I follow you."